century or three.
And as I say, the Church of Scotland kicked up this awful fuss, and I remember there was some lots and lots of trouble because we this was the common practice to cut a hand off and perhaps bring a hand in to for identification. But then we went on to this business of we used to have to if we shot up a terrorist in the forest, which was inaccessible, I mean, you just left them there, but take fingerprints if you could, or if they had anything on them, which invariably they didn't, to identify them, obviously you'd bring that in. But we just left the bodies where they were. I mean, two of the blokes, which we were all young, I mean, 18, 19, in our teens and early 20s, perhaps they'd prop them up against a tree. Invariably, as I say, they'd have trilby hats on, so they'd pull the trilby hat down over their eyes and put a cigarette in their mouth. It's something that people do. I suppose you could say it's a bit of fun, not very nice, but I've seen that quite a lot. That was quite a joke, that you'd give him a fag. They'd say, oh well, you know, give him a fag, and that's the least you know, we can do. But of course, if it was quite deep in the forest area, I mean, you couldn't possibly bring a body out. So I've no doubt that dotted about over quite a large area of Kenya, the Aberdare region, are some bodies, probably skeletons or whatever, or you know, which were left.
Was there any hatred of the enemy? What was your attitude towards the enemy?
I don't suppose hatred. I personally felt sorry for the blacks, because I always felt they were badly treated, and you couldn't condone the atrocities or and the murders, killing anybody. Europeans, especially little children, little babies. Initially, the movement, I suppose, they were doing what they felt was right because they were badly treated and it was their country. But like with all these things, you always get somebody who oversteps the mark and they commit these atrocities. I remember early on in Kenya, so it must have been probably around about late 54, 55, that there was a thing called the Lowry Massacre, and the Mau Mau had, their aim was apparently to really do something bad to frighten the normal people into, well, joining or being afraid of the Mau Mau generally. And this village of Lowry, they at night they wired up the little huts, the doors to the huts, and locked them, but wired them up and set fire to them, and anybody that did get out, they cut them down. And I remember going there, and that was one of my first, the first time that I'd really seen anything really bad and bodies and little babies. And they were burnt. These people were burnt, or anybody that had got away, they'd absolutely cut them. And I think instead of frightening people, as with lots of these things, it went the complete opposite way. It turned people against them because it was such a bad thing.
So you got to the Lowry Massacre immediately after it had happened?
It was, whatever, some, the day after, I think. So, there were several things like that, but mainly then towards the latter part of the service in Kenya, I was in the forest continually. Which, as I say, consisted of patrol. We would go on patrol for 2 or 3 days, or perhaps a week, 3 or 4 of us with a tracker. We were self-sufficient, food and stuff like that. And then we would come back in, theoretically, for a couple of days' rest. But...
How did you like going out into the forest?
Oh, I didn't mind that. I quite enjoyed that because you were your own masters, and you could more or less suit yourself. I quite enjoyed it. I think most of us enjoyed being on patrol.
Did you feel yourself to be in much danger?
No, never. I don't think ever, because we knew that these the Mau Mau terrorists weren't really equipped, or if they had guns, they were very few and far between. And most of their guns, as I say, they were homemade, with these bits of conduit, bits of pipe, and of course they had the knives and stuff like that. But they were. I don't think there was ever a time where the Mau Mau attacked any soldiers, any troops, or police. I certainly never heard of anybody ever being attacked. Never gave it a thought, because we had good equipment, and we knew that they were no match for us anyway.
But could there have been incidents where you fired on each other?
I was going to say to you, the times where you heard of, and that was quite frequent, where patrols had shot one another up, especially on exercise, where we had these big sort of operations or exercises. There were always incidents of somebody straying into an area, or where somebody else didn't know that they'd be there, and patrols shooting one another up. I remember, in fact, that it may have been on this particular operation in the Aberdeer region, where they used mortar bombs, and they mortared in the wrong place, and the mortars fell amongst their own people. And in fact, a particular friend of mine, he was very badly injured on this particular occasion.
Was there any danger from animal life in the forest?
Well, I've seen most of the big game. I've seen elephants. Giraffes and zebras and stuff like that were in abundance in the Naivasha region in the Rift Valley. But that was something, again, which we were always warned against and told we were never to ever fire on. But especially buffaloes. Buffaloes, I believe, were really dangerous, because they are quite cunning, and they've got a method of buffaloes of coming in, going in a circle. I mean, this is what we were told, I seem to remember, and coming behind you, coming back round again, coming up sort of behind you. But we were... constantly told never ever to fire on game, big game. I've never seen, I believe in the Naivasha area, that is the area for lions and that, but I've never ever seen a lion. But I've seen elephants, rhinoceros, rhinos. I remember coming along a path on one particular occasion. And we came round a bend, and standing right in front of us was a rhino. And he was standing across the path, and he just sort of looked round towards us. We stood still, he looked round towards us, twitched his ears, the ground shook and off he went. I remember that. That was a bit frightening. I think we were more afraid of coming across something like that, animals. And certainly nobody was afraid of the Mau Mau terrorists, nobody.
Was the forest a comfortable or an uncomfortable place?
Uncomfortable. Damp, always. I mean, it rained quite a lot up in around that area, so it was uncomfortable. That was the only thing I can honestly say that I didn't like about Kenya, and being in the forest was being wet. I remember falling into a stream one evening, and in Kenya, it gets dark suddenly. One minute it's sort of light, and there's not too much in between, and the next it's suddenly pitch black. And we were just going to get our heads down for the night, and we were crossing the stream, and I fell in. And up to wet, and it was absolutely freezing cold.
What about insect life? Did that bother you in the forest?
Insects, no. Little often at night when we were lying there in our sleeping bag, you'd get some, perhaps little mice would run over you. But you get to a stage where you really don't take any notice. I know one of our fears, or one of my fears, often I thought about snakes, but really you don't see any snakes, as you would imagine.
So you didn't come across things like leeches, like they had in the Malayan
leeches,
forest?
Leeches, oh, leeches by the ton. Now you've said that. That being back from memory, some quite funny. Going through water, where you go through a watery sort of conditions or area, or go through a stream, wade along, you would get leeches on you. Ticks. I remember ticks. You would get lots and lots of ticks would attach themselves to you. And, of course, they bloat themselves up until they're like little blue marbles and drop off. And I mean, I've had those everywhere. If this is forever, even on my balls, I remember I've had ticks, which and trying to, of course, you can't, you have to sort of wait until the, but we used to touch them with a cigarette end, and that is one way of making them drop off. But of course, doing this sometimes you or if you pulled them, they left their little jaws attached or it, and they would cause a little infection, which could develop into runny sores, which, you know, was sort of pretty uncomfortable. That was one of the things I think that lots of us suffered from, was like little runny sores on our legs and stuff.
Did you ever have any more serious sickness in Kenya?
I did, as a matter of fact. I had, I was involved, sickness. I had some sort of swamp fever, come whatever, some very high fever, and I was in, hospital with that in Nairobi. They never did really get to the bottom of that, but I was involved in an accident, on one occasion. I'd been detailed to go to from Naivasha, which, and the camp was right by the main road, the main sort of highway, in Naivasha, and they used to have lorries go in to Nairobi to the bakery to pick up bread for the battalion, and all the lorries in those days and during the Mau Mau time, all transport had escorts, always had an escort with them. And I, on one occasion, was going with the lorry into Nairobi to pick up all the loaves of bread. And on the way back, I remember coming down into the Rift Valley. The road was quite hairy, as lots of those roads are, because you come down from a high elevation down, lower down into the Rift Valley and join the main sort of highway. And as we got near enough to the bottom, the driver ran off the road and the lorry rolled over and over, and I had concussion. There were two or three others in the back, and some of those were badly injured, because being an army lorry, it was a softback lorry. And the upshot was that the driver was an inexperienced driver. I think this was his first journey that he had made. He had only passed out sort of a few days or a week before as a driver, and he hadn't really driven anywhere. And they would give him this particular job to do, and he rolled off of the road, ran off of the road, and went down an embankment. And the lorry just rolled over and over. And my last memory of that was that just going round and round, the lorry coming to a standstill, and the roar of the engine, and that's all I remember. And the next thing, I was in the hospital, in the battalion, sick bay hospital, and I had concussion. But I think two or three of the others were very badly injured. One of them, a bolt had sheared off them and punctured his lung, a metal bolt, and they had broken limbs and quite badly injured.
You mentioned that tracker or guide that you had, and you said he was a Maasai. Did you ever speak to him and get his opinion about the Mau Mau emergency and the Kikuyu?
Well, most of the Maasai that we had and I work or come across and work with, they were very insular. They weren't like the normal run of the mill Kikuyu, I'll say, the other sort of people. They were a bit sort of aloof. I think they considered themselves above the Kikuyu and the other sort of tribes. They were nice fellas, nice blokes, very quiet. But no, they never really gave an opinion. One of the things I remember that they used to do was to, if a terrorist was killed and they were there, they'd cut the little finger off. More or less like we keep a rabbit's foot. They would cut a little finger off and keep that as that would be
a charm.
For good luck, a charm.
Was there much difference between the different areas you were in, like Meru and the Abadaz?
Yeah, well, the Meru, if I remember right, Meru was quite a bit a forestry area. The Abadaz was certainly a forest area, but Naivasha, it's quite bare, from what I remember. Quite bare and arid, but when you got up country a bit, it was fairly luxuriant growth. I think they grew a lot of sisal, if I remember rightly. Sisal was a big crop, and because often when we were patrolling or tracking, we would go through acres and acres and of these field-like areas. And until we really got into the thick bush type parts of the country. But it varied in as much as the forest area was quite foresty, quite heavily, quite dense.
Did you ever cooperate with the RAF?
The RAF used to, if there was a large operation going on, the RAF would drop leaflets. In fact, I've got some leaflets somewhere, some of those leaflets. They would go in, I think, old bombers. I'm sure they were sort of like Lancaster, but I remember sort of Lancaster-type bombers or old-type planes, perhaps Dakotas, would go, and they would bombard an area with leaflets. Some of them had pictures on them with perhaps a heavily bandaged Mau Mau and perhaps a doctor in a white coat. I mean, you could see he was a doctor standing next to him with his arm around him or on his shoulder. And in Swahili, it would say sort of something like the equivalent of this is the sort of treatment you will get if you give yourself up. Come in, you'll be well fed, you'll be looked after, you'll be medically treated, come in and give yourself up. But yeah, the Air Force, the RAF, definitely, they played quite a big part in some of the operations. And I think they bombed some of the areas, if I remember.
Do you think these leaflets had any effect?
I don't really think so. I don't really think so. I mean, I believe that in some of these outlying areas, the Mau Mau used to give themselves up, but mainly because they were starving. They were hungry and possibly despondent. I suppose living in the forest for a couple of years, not being able to come out. They didn't get regular food, so invariably they would give themselves up.
Was your time in Kenya a miserable one or a happy one?
Happy. I enjoyed my experiences in Kenya. I saw lots of interesting things. I suppose I did enjoy Kenya.
How long were you operating there in active service?
I think probably over 18 months. I'm sure. By the time I'd done my I did my training and then went straight to Kenya.
Sounds as though it would have been 55 and into 56 then.
It was 56, yeah. Because I came home from Kenya in 56 and possibly a month or a couple of months before my time was up.
Were you... You said on the tape you were in the Royal Inniskilling Fusiliers. But you've also written down the Royal Irish Fusiliers.
Well, I initially was called up in the Royal Inniskilling Fusiliers and then transferred to the Royal Irish Fusiliers in Keeney because the battalion, I think the Inniskillings were coming home, their tour of duty had finished in Kenya, and the Royal Irish Fusiliers were coming from Korea to Kenya. They came from Korea to Kenya. So I was therefore transferred to the Royal Irish Fusiliers.
And it was the 1st Battalion in each case?
1st Battalion. 1st Battalion. 1st Battalion Royal Irish Fusiliers. And I think it was the 1st Battalion Royal Inniskilling Fusiliers.
Was there much difference between the two regiments as far as you could see?
No, identical. The only difference was the different coloured hackle that we wore in our hat. The Inniskilling Fusiliers, the hackle is grey. The Royal Irish Fusiliers, the hackle is green. Other than that, they're identical sister regiments.